Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Radio with your host, Steve Pallas and Jonah Vella. We are coming to you from the studios of RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula, and we'll be bringing you the latest and greatest in the news from the world of grassroots sports. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thanks, Joe. It's good to be here again. They keep letting us come back.
We've got an absolute bumper show today. We're going to be talking some fantastic stuff about how we can make sport more reachable economic-wise to communities out there. And we've also got some great guests that we'll be chatting to as well. But before we do all that, we're going to have a little bit of a chat of give the listeners a bit of an update on what's happening at Sports Community HQ, and we've got some really exciting news about a survey that's coming out.
Yeah, as per normal, Joe, it's been a big week, hasn't it? Been off around the country presenting to the national sports teams in Canberra, and then the Dragon Boat New South Wales conference, which was absolutely phenomenally good. And Joe, I think one thing very important to understand about dragon boating: they paddle, they don't row. Yeah, let's not make that mistake again in a room full of 50 dragon boaters. Now, very exciting stuff. You've been threatening for weeks and weeks and weeks to have the first of the online training sessions up on how to use Facebook. And how far away are we, Joe?
Christmas is only
12 weeks away.
Oh, my gosh, we're within a whisker of that happening. So hopefully that will be happening this week sometime. We're just going, ironing out a few minor technical details that I'm sure we'll get on top of very, very shortly. And we'll have our first module, which will be all around the use of Facebook at sports clubs, available for people to download from our website, which then they can go away and undertake the learning in their own space and in their own time. And I think it's going to be wonderful for the sports community out there.
Yeah, no, I, in all seriousness, I think it will be. And I think more importantly than the Facebook training, which is vitally important, but the one you're working on at the moment, Joe, which is
newsletters.
Email newsletters, I think.
Absolutely.
I think every club, well, we know every club in Australia should be using an email newsletter, and very few clubs are, and even fewer clubs know how to use the technology. So I look forward to that training session that you're working on as to how clubs can use email technology, email newsletter technology, because it's very, very powerful, and it can do a lot of the heavy lifting for clubs that currently volunteers are doing, Joe.
Absolutely, and it's going to be broken down into five different modules in which we'll be teaching you how to, you know, what tools you could have, there are available out there for you to use, and how you access them and how you create an account, and then how you manage your data, how you upload your email distribution list to the tool, what templates to select, how to send, what it costs. A lot of this can be done for free as well, depending on the size of your email distribution list, how to measure the results of your newsletter, who's clicked on what. All these really powerful things will teach you how to do it from the start to the end. So very excited about that.
Well, that will be great. And I guess the other thing we've been talking about for months now and threatening is the launch of our very first e-book, which is becoming bigger than Ben-Hur. We've just received the final version back from the graphic designer. And it's just going through proofing at the moment. So hopefully in the next 2 weeks, Joe, our very first ebook, which is very substantial. It's a good nearly 200 pages long on communication and social media strategies for local sports clubs. So that'll be pretty exciting.
Well,
too.
We might have to add a few days to that because you and I wrote it. So there may be quite a few spelling errors in there.
there could be. The proofing time should take. But our, in fairness, Joe, it has been gone through a very strong editing process.
It's going to be absolutely spick and span by the time it's ready to be presented to the community out there. And we're really excited about it because I've seen little snippets of it, and it is absolutely fantastic. And in all honesty, I wish I had something like that as a resource when I joined the committee of my local sports club and then became an officer of my local sports club. If there was something like that around, it would have made my job a lot easier.
And that's how we've written it, isn't it, Joe?
Yes.
We wrote it for ourselves 20 years ago. and the things that we needed 20 years ago. So that's very exciting. But the next cab off the rank of things we're going to work on and hopefully finish, Joe, is we're about to go and undertake a very massive survey of what it's like at grassroots sporting clubs. So we're targeting the first week of September to get the survey out to clubs, and we'll be asking all our listeners if they can take the time to download the survey or to complete the survey. And it really asks what it's like at your club and the nuts and bolts. What we're trying to do is work out what successful clubs do and what currently clubs do and don't do. So we're going to ask questions like, do you have strategic objectives? How often does your committee meet? Do you have what financial statements are at your club are presented to your committee meetings? What sort of policies you've got? What social media do you use? You know, those nuts and bolts things that no one actually knows in Australia, what's happening at grassroots sport. There's no research at that level.
Absolutely.
And we forever are talking on behalf of grassroots sports clubs and their volunteers, but we don't have any evidence to back up what we're saying. And really what we're saying, we learn from the hundreds of training sessions we do a year. Mm. But when we're talking to people in, you know, policymakers and leaders of peak bodies, who may have just lost a little bit of grasp of what's happening at grassroots sport and how hard it is at grassroots level, we want to have some evidence to say, hey, this is what it looks like. So that's really important and
Very, very powerful, actually, and one of the real highlights of our development at Sports Community as a contributor to the sports landscape of Australia. In fact, this is it's not beyond the realms of credibility to say this is a one of a kind exercise where we will actually, rather than talking anecdotes, we want to make sure that when we talk to people, we have evidence-based material to relay. That's where we want to come from, being evidence-based as opposed to
anecdotal.
So for me, a really, really exciting development for us.
Yeah, so now that's what's happening, and I look forward to the rest of the show, which Joe, having talked to a couple of the guests already, is very exciting.
Yes, so make sure you stay tuned. We're going to give you some sponsors messages here for the station, and when we return, we'll be back with some great content from the world of grassroots sports. Stay tuned. You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Okay, as mentioned at the top of the show, we've got a very special guest for you today. His name is Peter Whitten. He's the editor of Rally Sports Magazine. Welcome to the show, Peter.
G'day, Steve. How are you?
G'day, Peter. What an amazing story that the magazine is, the Rally Sport magazine. And if you could take us a little bit about the history, what is Rally Sport magazine, first of all, because not many of our listeners are involved in motorsports, so we'll kind of give them a little bit of background, and take us through the journey of the magazine going from a hard copy magazine to an online magazine.
Yeah, no problems. Well, I guess Rally Sport magazine is, for want and purpose, a magazine that car rallying, which is, I guess, for people who aren't motorsport savvy, those crazy guys who roar through the forest and do jumps and all sorts of stuff in the bush.
Yeah.
But more than that, I mean, it's a huge internationally with manufacturers such as Volkswagen and Hyundai and Citroen and Ford involved. So it's a big sport. Going back, I guess, about 25 years now, in 1989, Australia received a round of the World Rally Championship for the first time. That was happening in September of that year in Western Australia. And we started up the newspaper called Australian Rally Sport News back in 1989 to coincide with that event. We'd been interested in the sport for a long time and decided that the time was right to come out with a magazine that covered not only the top level of the sport, but also club competitors as well, right through from guys who join a car club and want to do a club rally, right through to state championship and Australian championship events. So, as I said, it started off in 1989 and continued right through until I think it was 2006, towards the end of that year, that we decided to call it quits and then move into online. But through that period, we produced, I think, over 200, 230 issues or something like that on a monthly basis. So content there over that period of time and a lot of, I guess, battles in as much as chasing advertising and making the dollar pay for itself, or the magazine pay for itself, I should say, to make sure that it was a worthwhile business.
Absolutely. That's the challenge that every publisher has, is the trade-off between their time putting together that, you know, the information about something that they love and the brutal commercialization of chasing the money to fund it all. Is that what...
It sure is, yeah. And sorry, we moved, or we tried to move with the times, I guess, throughout that period with glossy covers. I mean, when we started off, it was a basic tabloid newspaper, which was black and white with a colour cover on it. Yeah. We moved through to the glossy colour cover stages. Then in about 2004, we bit the bullet and went to an A4 gloss magazine.
Yeah.
But obviously, when you do that sort of thing, the costs skyrocket as well. The printing costs went up by something, I think, from memory, from about $3,000 an issue to print. It was up around $12,000 an issue to print.
Wow.
So there's some huge additional costs there, and that comes back to advertising and trying to get more subscribers and just trying to sell more copies. So it became pretty difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. So was that the reason for the move online, to take the magazine online? Was it just purely the commercial side?
It was purely commercial. I mean, we found that because we were a niche market, it was very difficult and almost impossible, I guess, to get your car manufacturers, your oil companies, those sort of big corporate sponsors to come in and advertise in a magazine such as ours.
Yes.
I guess their thoughts were probably that if they advertise in our magazine, that they were preaching to the converted. There's no good promoting a Ford or a Holden or a Datsun or whatever it might be to somebody who's already heavily involved in the motor industry or in the rallying game.
Yes.
So we were looking more and more at trying to get local, mechanics and things like that who build rally cars, guys who sell specialist motorsport equipment, those sort of companies to try and come in and advertise.
Yep.
But similar to us, many or most of those were small businesses who were struggling to make a living as well as time changed and things went online as far as selling via the internet and via eBay and other means.
Yes.
And our advertising revenue was going down and down. It was getting more and more difficult to advertise.
Yes.
So we sort of got to a point where we could see where the future was headed. And I guess we made, what for us was a disappointing decision to move away from the print format, but to go online. And I guess it's enabled the magazine to continue in some sense, but certainly not in the sense that we would have loved to have
continued,
which is keep producing a monthly magazine via newsagents.
So the magazine's by subscription online, is that?
No, initially we started off having as free content with a subscriber section of the website where we had extra features and things like that. It didn't prove very popular, and I guess if you look at the internet model around the world with news sites, I mean, there's a few news services that actually charge for content. That's becoming less and less, I think, as time goes on. And I think that's just the way of the world with the internet. People expect it to be free and available to them all the time without having to fork into their pocket. So
yeah.
It does become very difficult, again, to these want to put their money where they're going to get the most value.
Yes.
And it's probably a similar situation to what we were in previously, but obviously producing a website online is a lot cheaper than what it is to produce a magazine or a newspaper.
Yeah, certainly, absolutely. So how did your followers, your readers react when you went online? Did they come with you, or did you grow, or did you lose readership initially? Or
both, I think. I mean, sure, there was a lot of people, and I guess most of our readers were disappointed with the decision. And 7 years on, or 7 or 8 years on, we're still getting people who say, oh, gee, I wish the magazine was available, and of course we do too. One of the main problems that we came up with was that a lot of our core readers were guys who were, I guess, 55, 60-plus years of age, and they weren't internet savvy. So
yeah, yeah.
They're the sort of guys who love to grab a magazine, sit on the bus, sit on the train, sit down after dinner or whatever it might be,
yeah,
and read a magazine in their hands. They're not the sort of people to go and sit at a computer and read content on a screen.
Mm.
So that was a real challenge for us initially, and probably still is, because I know myself, when I sit at a desk all day looking at a computer screen, generally the last thing you want to do is sit down at a night time and spend an hour or two looking at another screen reading content.
Yeah.
But having said, there's also a whole new style of reader, I guess, come on. The people who want to read news on their internet via the computer, via their tablet, via their iPhone, whatever it might be. So I think you've just got to move with the times, and sure, we have lost some readers, but hopefully we've gained more than what we would have.
Cool. So, and I guess this is a discussion we're continually having with clubs, is that there is this part of the community that only gets their information from online, and particularly the younger generation, or the kids as they're through their teens and their early adulthood, wouldn't even touch a magazine or a newspaper. Everything they get is online. So sessions that we run is teaching clubs how to grow their own audience. So when you move, retaining the customers or the subscribers that you did have, but then growing and attracting this whole new...
I think it's really... initially we obviously promoted the fact that we were going online, and we had a subscription database that we mailed out to and did all that sort of stuff. And from there on, it's really, when you have an internet presence, it's about maintaining the content on the site. Make sure you've got quality content, a good variation in your stuff, because as we all know, it's all about search engine rankings and Google rankings and all this sort of stuff. The more content you can put on your site, the more traffic potentially you can get. It was difficult at the start, I guess starting from nothing. I mean, we had a web presence even when we had the magazine towards the end, but it was nothing like what we do now. But yeah, certainly trying to encourage people to go on, if you like. If you go out and buy a specialist magazine and like what we were, you might pay these days, I guess the magazine's around $10, $11, $12 maybe for a good quality colour magazine. But you might read through it, and you might only read half a dozen articles because that's all that interests you, whereas people can go online and read that for free. So the challenge for a website such as ours is not only to produce the content, but to try and have a range of content that covers a wide or a broad section of people. You don't want to just have stuff on the World Rally Championship, because that's only a limited... While most people are keen to see it, that information is available anywhere throughout the world. I mean, there's yes. the WRC website, there's all different sorts. What you need to try and do, you target clubs and different events and local state things to try and make sure your content is more relevant.
Relevant to different audiences, yeah. Absolutely. So what are the sorts of... I'm assuming we also have a very large website that we live and die by, with the analytics behind the scenes and
yep.
that.
Yeah.
From your perspective and your readers, what are the types of stories that that people are interested in? Because when we talk to clubs, often clubs just think that the only thing that people are interested in is the scores for that particular week. But in our experience, it's kind of nothing further from the truth.
I think you're right. That information is often available in other areas. And certainly from a car rally point of view, I mean, there's so many other stories that go on before the event about the organising club releasing details of the event, when it's going to be on, who the sponsors are, then leading up to it, who the main competitors are, and then even over the event having some up-to-date information about how the event's going, and then, of course, at the end of it, you put out your results and who won. But the thing that we find is that more and more the clubs aren't willing to do that. We're lucky in a lot of instances to even get results sent through by clubs. So
yes,
it gets right back to, I guess, the ground level thing of clubs need to get themselves organised. And I'm involved in car clubs and cricket clubs and footy clubs and whatever, so I know how it all works. No different, no matter what club you're involved in. But you need to have somebody within the club who's driving that barrow and saying, right, I'm the media person or I'm the publicity person. Even if I can only send a magazine or a website or whatever it might be, some information in bullet point that they can then make a story out of, at least that's something. I mean, because everybody, or not everybody, is capable of writing a story that's going to be usable on the internet or in the magazine or in a newspaper, but if you can provide the bullet point information, at least then somebody else can grab that info and write it into a short 3 or 4 paragraph story and get that information out there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we're talking with Peter Whitten, the editor of Rally Sport magazine. Now, Peter, we've gone 10 minutes or so into the interview without us even giving you the domain name of your magazine. So can you just give our listeners the domain name?
Sure. It's rallysportmag.com.au.
Fantastic. Now, I'm looking at, as we speak, I'm looking at the website now, and you know, front and centre, on the apart from the rotating picture on the front cover, front and centre of the website is your email subscription tab.
Yep.
How often do you send out email newsletters, and is that an important way of you driving traffic and communicating what's on the website to your...
Hugely important. I mean, the website that we run now is literally a part-time job, even though it takes far too many hours than what I would probably like, and I do other PR work to make a living.
Yes.
It's not a full-time job, so we need to go and keep promoting all the time, and the newsletter subscription is vital. We send one out once a week, generally on a Tuesday morning, so that when people come into work, they've got it in their inbox, and the latest stories or the main stories from the previous week are there. And that not only drives traffic, but it keeps the website front and foremost in people's minds, because I know yourself, or myself, I should say, that if I look at a website now and again, I don't look at it daily or weekly. Mm. And you go back and there might be a lot of stuff you've missed. So at least with an email newsletter, which is developed by our website and sent out via the website, it's going into people's inboxes and they're getting that reminder just to have a look and just click on a link if they're interested, or even if they're not interested, at least it brings it to the front of their memory as well.
Yeah, I mean, very, very, very important, and we see that the email newsletters in our training is the basis of club communication forward, to be honest.
Yeah, and certainly we also do that via Facebook as well, and Facebook is one of those treadmills, I guess, that once you get on it, you need to keep pedalling, otherwise you get left behind, or if people aren't seeing your Facebook presence, then it gets old and they lose interest. But I think having a presence like that, not only can you send out email newsletters once a week, but if you're updating a Facebook page regularly, then people are seeing that as well. And we've got, I think, nearly 4,000 likes on our Facebook page. So when we post something there, there's a huge opportunity for people to actually interact with your website and go and read the stories.
Oh, fantastic. Are you putting different information onto the Facebook compared to... email newsletter or the website, or is it's just as you're putting stories on the website, you're putting them on Facebook and then in the weekly email?
Yeah, generally that's what we're doing. We're putting if we upload a story to the website, and not all the stories, but certainly a story of any main interest, we'll put on the Facebook page as well, and then it will link straight back to the website. So always linking back to the website, because that's your key business, I guess. That's where you want the traffic to be reading the content. You don't really want them to be reading your information on Facebook and spending all their time there. You want them to see the headline and maybe the first paragraph on Facebook and then go back to your website, because obviously that's helping with your page views and your rankings and everything else. So always trying to drive that traffic back to your website.
Yeah, and then that's exactly what we do. And so from a club perspective, for those that are responsible for doing this within your club, it doesn't mean that you have to create a story for Facebook and a story for email newsletter and a story for the website. Effectively, you're writing a website story and using it multiple times. So it's not as big a job as it sounds, getting out the message about your site and your club to your audience, is it?
That's correct. And as you say, I mean, it's not that hard. One of the difficulties we find with the Rally Sport magazine website, we get a lot of, well, I shouldn't say we get a lot, we get a fair amount of club competitors or state competitors or even national championship competitors sending us their own press releases.
Yes.
And their press releases that they've put together themselves with a photograph and whatever. And the biggest problem we find with a lot of that stuff is it's poorly written. And that's not having a go at anybody, because it's horses for courses, and while they build great cars or do whatever they do,
yes,
not necessarily writing press releases as their thing. So often you spend a lot of time actually editing and rewriting press releases that come in, which takes a lot of time. And if you send off to a publication a press release that probably needs a lot of work, there's a lot less chance that it's going to be used.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things to consider as well. And that's where, even by sending a bullet point list to a publication, and having them write it, even if it's only a few paragraphs, is generally...
Yeah, couldn't agree more. When you receive press releases, what's the sort of key information or the key points that you kind of, as a user of press releases, want to see in the press release that you receive?
I think from a club point of view, and certainly from an event point of view, you really need to have the core information in the first two or three paragraphs, because if you have a lengthy press release, there's a good chance that people won't read it all. So really, in the first two parts, you need to have what it's about, what the date is, when it's happening, all that sort of information. You don't want to leave that right to the end.
Yes.
Because if somebody only reads the first two or three paragraphs, at least they still know the core information that you're trying to get out, not having to wait till right at the end of the story to figure that out for themselves.
Do many of the press releases you receive come with photos? And if they did, do you use those photos on the website? Or
Generally we do. And I guess one of the things that clubs need to be wary of these days is that photographs are available anywhere. You can do a Google search on images for just about anything you like and you'll find a photo. But the difficulty is having copyright release, I guess, to use those photos. And while you might find a photo of your car or whatever it might be to go with a story, if you haven't got permission for that story, for that photograph to be used somewhere else, it can become a bit of an issue. And
permission from the photographer, you mean, Peter?
Correct, yes. Yeah, just to make sure that, and we've got no problems with giving a credit to the photographer. Writing that press release and that photograph needs to make sure that they've got the okay to use that photograph, because it's somebody's work, and often the photographers are running their photography as a business, and they're entitled to make money out of it just like anybody else is.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, video, what role does video play in your site? Social media, email, newsletters, do you use video much? I see you've got, I'm just flicking through now as we go, and you've got the International Rally of Queensland as your last, most recent video, which is...
Yeah, and generally they're just videos that we've picked up from YouTube of interest. We probably don't put as many videos on there as we'd like to. We're certainly not into developing our own videos, mainly through a cost and time factor there. But I think it's good just to have a variety of things. I guess the main reason is there, people can go and find whatever they want on YouTube and watch videos on whatever their topic of interest is. But if you have a selection of videos on your website relating to the topic of your site, at least then you're keeping the traffic on your website rather than on YouTube. So the more time you can keep them on your website, the better it's going to be for you.
Yes.
And I guess eventually the more chance you've got of them coming back to the website regularly and then going to other parts of the website where they might be reading news articles or feature stories or whatever the content may be.
Yeah, absolutely, and clubs have, just in the broader community, clubs have such a great opportunity to just take videos of whatever's going on around their club that it's actually really interesting to a lot more people than people that are just there at the event.
That's right, and I think another thing that we can bring up too is that particularly at a club level, people like to see their name in print, whether that be on the internet or in a newspaper, a magazine, whatever it might be, and that's... That might be blowing your own trumpet or whatever it might be, but if you see your name in a story or you see your name in print somewhere, you can go to whoever it might be, if it's a sponsor for a motorsport club or something like that. But at least it gives people a nice feeling, and then they go and show friends and family, and then they go and look at the website, and then other people look at the website, and then it goes on that. So by having a real club focus, I think, is a good thing, and probably a lot of people and a lot of clubs maybe don't go down that track enough by promoting their own people, but certainly it's a way that can expand your traffic numbers.
Oh, absolutely. People don't realise that everybody loves to see their name in print or in lights, and it seems to not matter how old you are.
That's the old story if you ever Googled your name, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah. Now, you spoke at the start of the show about that Rally Sport Mag actually covers from the elite rallying right down to local club level. So
Yep. What
sort of information, well, first of all, how do local clubs send you information? But what sort of information are you looking for from a club level? What sort of information are your readers looking for?
Well, certainly from a club level. And, I mean, going back to when we had the newspaper and the magazine, we had a state section every month. So we have a Victorian section, New South Wales page, a Queensland page, et cetera, et cetera. And we had a columnist in every state who would write that information. So people would actually send the stuff to that columnist, and then he would gather that information and put it into the monthly column. We don't have that as much now, but we certainly don't have any restrictions on what content we put out there. So if a club's out there and they've got an event coming up, they, as I said, they can put it in bullet point, they can write a short press release and send it off to us via our contact email address, and then we'll compile it together and put it on the website for people. So there's really no there's no set formula as far as what we do and don't take. As long as it's content that we think is going to be worthwhile for the general reader, we'll put it up.
And is it, from your perspective as the publisher and you know, the decision maker about what goes up and what doesn't go up, is the story of the story as relevant? Like if an event's coming up, like even the regular releases telling how the planning's going, how who's being entering, and telling the story leading up to the event, we find is just as important to tell as the story of what happened at the event. Or do you just prefer just to receive the information about an event itself and not worry about the lead up too much?
It often depends on not so much the quality of the event, but the status of the event. I mean, if it's a state championship event, then we'll often get the organising club sending out information about the regulations have been released and these are the dates it's going to be on and these are the leading competitors. So you'll have two or three articles before the event runs. And I think if the club has got sponsors throughout their organisation, and whether that be for the local table tennis competition that's coming up or whatever it might be, that's your ideal chance to get your sponsors out there and get them promoted. Because if it's the, I don't know, if the Shell Table Tennis Championship, for example,
yes,
and you can promote that via a couple of articles leading up to the event, they're getting their coverage before the event. Because often, once the event's run and won, a publication may only, and not so much a website, but a newspaper, for example, they may only print the results afterwards.
Yes.
So if you've got a sponsor and you've got someone who's committing money to your event, you've got to try and give them the best value possible. And as you say, usually by doing stuff pre-event is the ideal time to do it.
Yeah, and it was interesting. I was watching the Tour de France telecast over the last couple of nights, and the commentators were saying the only reason that there was a couple of breakaways was to promote, so that the sponsors had a that sponsored the riders of the team, yep, of the riders got on international television for a couple of hours worldwide.
Yeah,
and so it's interesting that promoting of sponsors is influencing the way that we even compete, let alone prepare for events.
And that's right. And when you've got clubs who are getting sponsorship for their events or their season, for example, I mean, if a cricket club has a sponsor for the year, if they go back to the sponsor at the start of the next season and say, "Well, you put up some money again," they're going to say, "Well, what did we get for our money last year?" And if you can come back to them and say, "Well, here's a screenshot of this website where this appeared," or "This is a newspaper article," or whatever it might be, then you've got some bargaining power to go back the following year and actually get them back again.
Yeah, I mean, proving the value of your sponsorship is vitally important, but sometimes very difficult, isn't it?
It sure is, yeah. And, I mean, our website, as much as anybody, I mean, we're struggling, I guess, to attract enough sponsorship to keep the thing running with all your costs and things that are involved. And the old story goes is, the more sponsorship and advertising you can get, the more you can then put into actually creating more content. So yeah, it's a bit of a circle in a way, where you've got to rob Peter to pay Paul. But to be able to create quality content for your website, you've got to have a means of getting some income to have someone go and produce it for you.
Yeah, that's the challenge of the website editor, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Now, from looking at the different types of content, whether it be written, video, audio, like you've got podcasts on there, and photos from your, well, I was going to say readers, but your followers' point of view, what's the most popular type of content that you're seeing? And have you seen a change over the last couple of years from, say, written to something else?
I guess it's more stuff that we would do more of if we had the opportunity and the resources would be the Australian Championship stuff. As I said before, the World Championship Rally stuff is available anywhere. And anywhere, I mean, it's the manufacturers that are involved put out press releases, and a lot of websites cover that sort of stuff throughout the world. So it's not hard to get information. But the national championship in Australia, it's stuff that proves popular. But also stories on key personalities in the sport, that's also very popular. And whether that be a podcast interview that might go for 15 or 20 minutes, or whether that be a written, printed story on somebody who's been a past champion in the sport, or a current champion, or a future champion, that's, I guess, unique content that's, well, it's unique to your website and certainly is going to be popular for readers.
It looks like, just looking at your website, that you've just moved into podcasting. How for the website?
It's been interesting. I mean, we've found that it's been very easy to do. It's not hard to jump on Skype or something like that and then go and record a phone conversation, and then you jump into a podcasting program and put it together. I mean, you can do all that in about 15, 20 minutes. The actual listening of the podcast probably hasn't been to the numbers that we thought it might have been. That also could be in relation to where people are looking at their content as well, whether they're looking at it on phones or on tablets or on computers, or a lot of people are still looking at websites and things during the day when they're at work, so that if it's a podcast, they haven't really got that opportunity there, or they can't hide it from the boss that they're actually listening to something that's not work.
Yes.
And as you said before, that when you get home of a night time, sometimes you're doing something different and that's not on your radar. So, as I said, it's something that we'd like to do more of. But it's probably something that you need to commit to as well and have it done fairly regularly. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's one of those things that I think some people will pick it up really quickly. Other people will say, no, I'd rather just read it on the screen or look at a magazine type thing.
Yes. Yes. So are you doing, you're doing your podcasting on a weekly basis or fortnightly basis?
Well,
no,
not really. We were sort of doing a few a week. We haven't done one for 2 or 3 weeks now, but that's just been circumstance more than anything else. Often it's just easier to jump on the phone, particularly if you're not getting a huge income from your website. It's easier to jump on the phone or onto Skype and then go and interview somebody as you're talking to them and then record it that way, rather than actually have to record something and then transcribe it and put it into the written form.
Yeah, absolutely. We think exactly the same thing, hence us talking to you. Now, Peter, thank you so much for your time. It's been fantastic. How can listeners follow Rally Sport Magazine? Our listeners follow your Rally Sport magazines. Obviously, the website,
www.rallysportmag.com.au, either via our Facebook page, which is, I've just got to check this, it's just facebook.com/rallysportmag.
Yep.
We've got a small Twitter presence as well. Once we do a Facebook update, it goes onto the Twitter account as well.
Yes.
A contact page on our website as well, but people can email us information at news@rallysportmag.com.au. So plenty of ways in the modern world to get in touch, and certainly encourage people to get onto the website and have a look.
Yeah. Oh, we've been, as we were preparing for the interview, and then as we've been going through the interview, we've been very much going through the website, which has been Joe's contribution to the whole session, is to just be looking at the website. So
fantastic.
Peter, thank you so much for your time. It's been fantastic. Peter Whitten, editor of Rally Sport Magazine. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the opportunity.
No worries.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Joe Novella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au. And there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, welcome back to Sports Community Radio with Steve and Joe. We're going to have a chat about how clubs can make their sport a bit cheaper to attract more members to their club and make it easier for their members to participate in their sport, Steve. Now, number one way that they could do this is by introducing a monthly payment scheme.
That's a good point, Joe. That is that is a good way of doing it.
Not necessarily the most important point, but it's the number one point that we thought of.
Well, it's the number one point.
Well,
we wrote down, wasn't it? But yeah, it's really important for club presidents and committees to realise that one of the major barriers in sports participation is the fact that sport is actually really expensive. Think about just how expensive your sport is. And then think about for those families that that may have two or three participants, and then all of a sudden, when you're talking about fees, uniforms, equipment, transport, the raffle tickets we've got to buy, the fundraising events we've got to go to, the sausage sizzles we've got to cook, and the those sorts of things, Joe, becomes very, very, very expensive. So we thought we might spend a couple of minutes.
Well, just on that, like without a word of a lie, I can.
What, only as opposed to what you normally do on the show and lie to our listeners?
I can speak for my particular sport, which I know quite intimately, which is soccer or football. And depending on the club that you're at, it could cost you for three kids. It could cost you $5,000 for the year,
And not many of us, no matter how much we earn, Joe, can afford that. So let's have a look at it. We'll start from the first one we came up with, which was monthly payments.
Monthly payment,
and that doesn't make it cheaper. It just makes it potentially more affordable.
Reduces the burden, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. So instead of
One hit,
yeah. We spread it out over 3, 4, 5, 6 or monthly deductions over the season. And membership packages and membership software is getting a lot more smarter now, Joe, where we're able to do this automatically, so it doesn't create an additional burden to the administrators. And look, even if it does, we are loathe to create work for an administrator, but I think in this instance, if it's a choice between somebody playing your sport or someone not playing your sport, to create that little bit of administrative overhead, that's probably worthwhile. So that's really, really, really important, that one, to consider or create the options to have upfront payments, but then also monthly payments.
Okay, the next one that we want to have a little bit of a chat about, and before we do that, I just want to welcome into the studio one of the most important cogs in the well-oiled machine that is sports community, young master Stuart Wilson, who is now very embarrassed because he feels like he's been put on the spot, but he is just a class act, isn't he, Steve?
Well, we'd have to call him the producer of the show, Jay.
We would. He's in the studio. He's making a special guest appearance. Doesn't normally come out of his cave all that often, but he is in the studio, and he's just raised the bar a bit, hasn't he?
Yeah. No. If we actually had to plan this and turn his microphone on, that would have made it even better, Jay. But the reason he's come out of his cave, for want of much better terminology, was
because I've stuffed up.
You forgot. You forgot the USB stick to record. Now, focus, Joe. Let's go.
Let's go. Next one is membership. Buy your membership.
Family memberships.
Family memberships.
Family memberships, Joe. So that's really a good one and successfully used by many clubs is to create a family membership where it encourages all the family to be involved in the club, not just one or two people. So, and if you can make that family membership more valuable, or create more value for a family than having to buy three or four individual memberships. That's probably a very, very fair thing, as well as it helps to engage the family because they're members. And we know, Joe, from our research and from also speaking with clubs, that members are much more likely to help a club than simply supporters. So clubs need to and should be encouraging as many people as possible that support the club and have a link to the club to become members of the club. And the more members we have, the more it makes it cheaper to run the club because we can spread the fixed costs over more people. So create membership packages for more than just individuals, for groups of people and different family members.
All right, the next way that clubs could make it a little bit easier on the hip pocket for their community is to have an equipment shop or an exchange of equipment area.
Yeah, and let's include equipment and uniforms in the same thing, Joe, because same sort of concept, and particularly in junior sport where the kids are growing up a lot faster than what they're going to wear out their uniforms or their equipment. So create a shop or an exchange where parents can bring outgrown uniforms or not used sporting
boots
equipment
or whatever,
boots, yep, cricket bats, or any of the equipment from any of the sports, and then exchange them or buy secondhand equipment and secondhand uniforms, which are obviously a lot cheaper than buying brand new. But for some of them, a season's wear in a pair of cricket whites or a season's wear of a cricket bat is nothing, you know. So that they're almost as new, particularly the way I used to bat Joe and the juniors, that was almost as new, just barely broken in my cricket bat when I was. But also, let's be honest, I didn't grow out of too many cricket bats either. So, but just moving on, like you get the point that
absolutely, and I think very very strong point as well, because it does enable the members out there to probably save a little bit of money, and it increases the chances of them signing up again the year after. Now, the next one that we want to chat about is for clubs to encourage carpooling. So there's, you know, clubs can do that in a number of ways. You can put up a notice board on your websites. You can use your social media. You can announce that there's going to be a carpool for a specific event or a game or at a time. And you can encourage your members and get them into a pattern of behaviour that encourages them to share rides, which makes a hell of a lot of difference.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a car. It could be a bus, Joe.
It could be a bus, yeah.
Many teams travel to and from games together, particularly when they're travelling long distances. They travel to and from games together in a bus, and potentially that bus then can be sponsored, or that day's trip can be sponsored by a local business in town or however it's funded. The players put in a couple of bucks each for the petrol and the hire of the bus or whatever the case may be, which may still be a lot more cost effective than, you know, a team full of cars driving over to the game. So very 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 often forgotten cost in local sport is travel costs to the game.
Absolutely. Okay, the next way that clubs could make it easier on the hip pocket for their community is a buy your membership scheme. Now, Chief Steve, I should say, sorry, this is one of your brainchilds. It's beyond my feeble mind to comprehend, so I'm wondering whether you can explain it for all of us mere mortals out there.
Yeah, this is one that's starting to catch on. Again, I won't necessarily claim it as my concept, but for people that simply that can't necessarily afford or easily afford sport, the concept of buying their membership is something that is becoming more and more popular. And what do I mean by buying membership, Joe? I'm looking at your very blank face here. And clubs might create an activity. Let's say it's a raffle. To start with, we'll say they've created a pre-season raffle. So the club may then say to everybody, if you sell, and just say the membership is $200 a year, if you sell $400 worth of raffle tickets, you get your membership for free.
Right.
Right. And so if raffle tickets, Joe, are $2 a ticket, right? So then we're only talking about 200 tickets. Right, so anyone can sell 200 tickets. It just takes, how much time is it going to take? How many people are we going to have to ask? But for those people that don't have the money, then that becomes a very option that they can easily do.
Wow, that's a great idea. And I can straight away see an application in social media.
That's
maybe,
right.
Maybe you encourage, if you get 200 likes to the website.
Well, it could be that, and it could be 200 likes to the website. It could be
Facebook, I should say.
Facebook, yeah. Or it could be, and it's, you probably want to monetize it more than likes directly, but depends on what your strategy is. But it doesn't have to be a raffle. It could be you hold a pre-season event, and if you sell a table of 10, the tickets may be, you know, $100 a ticket. And if you sell a table of 10, to go to the event, then you get your membership for free. Or
sign up 3 members and get yours for...
Yeah, that's right. And so it doesn't matter what the concept is, as long as it creates the real value for the club. But put yourself in the place of the person that just simply wouldn't have the money or creates a lot of problems. They've gone from... The only alternative they had was not playing or begging for a discount or charity, to being given an opportunity where they get to earn their membership. You know, they've earned their right to be in the club. They've earned that. They feel good about themselves. It's a really positive situation. It's a really positive scenario. They're engaging with people and telling lots of people about their club. And it's also helping them on a financial side of it. But it's such a positive way of being able to overcome this financial challenge that many people have.
Would you also extend that into volunteering? So the potential of because we're, clubs, and with the amount of tools now and available to clubs that have become, that require technical expertise and various other jobs around the club, would it be a strategy to offer a 50% discount on membership, for example, if you volunteer to be the webmaster for your club?
And it could be. It depends on the situation of the club, and it depends on the situation of the people you've got within your club. But I like your thinking, Joe, that it shouldn't just be limited to what we're trying to do here is actually start creating thinking and starting to say, rightio, there are people in the community that just can't pay a dollar.
But they can create value for the club.
And they want to.
Yes.
You know, they want to. And, okay, the one resource they don't have is dollar, but they've got time. And they've got family. And they've got passion.
Networks.
And they've got desire.
Yep.
And they want to help. Let's create ways that they can help.
Yep, that's fantastic. Okay, the next way that clubs could make it easier on the hip pocket for their community is to be on the lookout for the numerous grants and funds that are made available to clubs and to players, and you can get a lot of those through our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au.
Click on the grants tab, Joe.
Click on the, and I'm just trying to think. Can you think of any of it off the top of your head?
But there's plenty. I mean, and particularly relating to participation. And let's just expand it a little bit. If you're a club and a child, we've got junior members in Northern Territory and Queensland, that also opens you up to participate in the sports voucher programs going on in those states. But yeah, certainly
I can think of uniform grants that have come out,
travel grants going to major events, equipment grants, local councils are often good places for grants for clubs, safety equipment
grants,
Certainly participation, and also as clubs begin to start to engage with the newer communities, there's lots of grants available from time to time that are also helping us engage with newer communities and introducing newer communities to Australia, to our Australian sporting culture. So grants is a really good way of offsetting some or all of the costs of some participation.
Okay, we've seen the light globe go off in your head, Steve, as you've come to the realisation that we've left off one particular important one, and that is ASF. So what do you mean by the ASF?
The Australian Sports Foundation, Joe, is a fantastic way that clubs can create projects which they can then promote to their membership, where the members would donate and get a tax deduction for that donation. So the Australian Sports Foundation allows clubs to register projects with them, and then people would nominate that project as their preferred beneficiary. So you can create a project around, and it's quite reasonable under the Australian Sports Foundation guidelines that the projects relate to participation. So you can create a project about getting uniforms and coaching and sporting equipment for your under-9s, your under-10s, your under-12s, your under-14s, your under-16s, under-18s, seniors, masters. It doesn't matter. Create that as a project and then go to your community and ask for donations to help you fund that project. So particularly where you've got large communities that otherwise would not necessarily be able to afford to play the sport, so in our lower socioeconomic areas, and our newer communities, often where they've just come into Australia and people aren't necessarily working. So this is another way that we can look to offset the costs for those communities, engaging them in sport and making it cheaper for everyone, Joe. So there's kind of 8 or 9 different ways to make it cheaper for us to be participating in grassroots sport.
Okay, sadly, we've come to that time where we need to say goodbye to everyone. Thanks very much for listening to us. We've been made aware this week that our podcast has now clicked over the 30,000 view mark, which is an absolutely astounding number, and it goes to the hard work and dedication of all the staff at Sports Community. So we hope you've enjoyed this particular episode. And if you do happen to enjoy what you hear, then make sure you visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you'll find lots and lots of content in the form of articles and videos and online courses and much, much more that will help you in your journey on your committee or as a volunteer of your sports club. So on behalf of me, Joe Novella,
and me, Steve Pellis, thank you for making us part of your sports community.